You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
What is good, everyone? Welcome to KGW's 3-on-3 Blazers. The tank is in full effect. Back-to-back-to-back 30-point-plus blowouts. We're going to look ahead at the future, too, especially the offseason. Ping pong balls in the future, just maybe. And Jared Cowley is about to introduce a new segment. Let's stop messing around and start the show. Oh, it is so good to be back. Downtown Portland, Oregon, inside the KGW studios. My name is Orlando, joined as always by Jared Cowley. Jared, how you doing, man?
I'm good. The Blazers are back to doing what I wanted them to do, which is nice. I think on our last podcast, I had resigned myself to the possibility that they were just going to win all these games. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to enjoy the games as they come and, you know, come what may. But this is what I wanted. Mm-hmm. I wanted them to tank. I want them to have high draft picks in this coming NBA draft. And they did it. You know, they sat Jusuf Nurkić down with plantar fasciitis and something that I was looking into that. You had, I think it was Goran Dragic back in the 2020 NBA Finals. He tore his plantar fascia in game one and came back in like game five. And, you know, this isn't a tear for Nurkić or anything.
Like, right.
The fact that he's missing a month and probably the rest of the season, this is all about the tank. So they're doing what they need to do. The front office is making the decisions that needed to happen so that they can put themselves in the right position to get the best player in the draft or a high draft pick that they can trade. And that's what I wanted. So I'm good. I'm happy.
Jusuf Nurkić has never been so relatable to the common man, especially here in Portland, Oregon.
That is right.
You know, if it wasn't his, you know, love for coffee, now having this, injury, I had multiple people, viewers here at our TV station in Portland at KGW who were like, hey, I've dealt with that, man. It's not fun.
Yep.
You know, so everyone's like, all right, Nurk.
I have plantar fasciitis.
Yeah, see?
So I know what he's going through. When I wake up in the morning and try to walk down the stairs, it's a painful endeavor.
So now, you know, Nurk gets to look good on the sidelines, break out some of those custom suits he's got, and, you know, enjoy the show. The Blazers, 25-37. They're 11th place in the West. They're a game ahead of the Spurs, a game behind the Pelicans. They're on a three-game losing streak. They've lost by 30 or more in each of those three games, which is what you want to see if you've been rooting for the tank, you know. That four-game win streak before the All-Star break had people a little nervous if you were in favor of the tank, but now it looks like it is full steam ahead with 20 games left in the regular season for the Portland Trail Blazers. So in a good spot to make sure they keep that draft pick.
They are within reach of having the fifth or sixth worst record in the league by the time this is all said and done.
Mm.
I don't know if they can reach four. OKC has five fewer wins. That's going to be, I mean, OKC, they'll surprise you now and then. I mean, I could see them. I don't know when the Blazers are going to win another game. I mean, this roster, I think this is the worst roster in the NBA right now. They could finish the season 0-23. But I think that, you know, they have one more win than the Spurs. They have two more wins than the Kings, three more than the Pacers. I mean, I think they could easily get to the fifth worst record in the league. And if that happens, then they have a 42% chance of landing a top four pick.
Man, that jump,
that's pretty awesome.
That number jumps significantly, because right now it's like 5% chance.
Right now, so that's for the number one pick. Right now they have a 23% chance of a top four, a 5% chance of the number one pick. If they got up and had to the fifth worst record in the league, they'd have a 42% chance of a top four pick and a 10.5% chance of the number one pick.
I was telling you before the podcast, before we started recording, man, I should have never discovered Tankathon, because
that's where I am right now. I have my phone open to Tankathon right now.
It's
my
so much fun.
It's like hovering over the sim lottery button.
It's like, what are we going to do today? Oh yeah, I know. Let's go ahead and sim.
All right, let's do it.
Yes. What are we?
Sim,
what are we getting?
Lottery. Here it goes. Here it goes.
What do we get, man?
No, they fell down to the 10th pick.
Where are the Pelicans at?
Yeah, the Pelicans 11, so they got the 10th and the 11th pick.
Oh, that's not that fun.
Yeah, it is what it is.
It is what it is, man. So, you know, it's good to be back on the podcast. Been a little bit of while since we've done this, but, man, like the path is pretty clear now. Even though it kind of was back then, there was still, you know, just a little bit of doubt because they were winning games, and, you know, now with Jusuf Nurkić out, and I want to say there's probably 7 or 8 players on the injury list, the most recent one that they send to media members like us. So it's pretty clear that this is a time where you get to enjoy a lot of the younger guys now that Anfernee Simons is a seasoned vet.
Yeah, all 22 years
old. Yeah, man. So I think now's a good time, really, because we're going to cover a lot, you know, past, present, future, I guess, of this season and the current state of the Blazers with a brand new segment that Jared is going to introduce to us today, man. So I'll let you have the floor.
Awesome. Yeah, you and I have been talking really since, you know, Nate and Max left, that we needed to come up with a new game for this podcast. Mm-hmm. Longtime listeners, you're going to remember Rip It. And Rip It, that was a game. Mm-hmm. We used to play that at the end of each episode of 3-on-3 Blazers. It was a ton of fun there. There were usually there were winners, usually Orlando. There were losers, usually me. And then there were hecklers. It was usually Nate. Or actually, it was always Nate. We retired that game after Nate and Max left because Max was really the architect of Rip It, mm-hmm. and it didn't feel right continuing it without him and without Nate. So I guess this isn't really a game because there aren't going to be losers or winners or prizes or anything like that. This is more kind of a recurring segment that we're going to try and bring back on every episode. And this new segment is called Worried or Not Worried. And the way I came up with this idea is I was thinking about whenever we've taken listener questions in the past, or when I listen to mailbag episodes on, you know, Locked on Blazers or Jacked Ramsey's or other podcasts, so often so many of the questions do start with some variation of the phrase of, are you worried about, or should fans be worried about, or should I be worried about? So that led me to think, let's just make a segment that kind of takes the hot topics of the week in Blazers land and ask whether we are worried about them or not, or whether fans should be worried about them or not. So for this segment, I think going forward, we're going to have like two subjects or topics. We'll lay out the scenario and then we'll just ask, are you worried or are you not worried? And we'll answer that and give our reasons why. Today, to kind of kick it off, I think we're just going to dedicate the entire episode to this segment. We're expanding the number of subjects or topics for this episode, but going forward, we'll have this segment at like the beginning or the end of the episode, not sure which yet, and it'll be condensed down to just a couple subjects or topics. But that is more than enough explanation. Let's just get this started. I'm going to go ahead and lay out. We're going to try and we have seven topics today. We're going to try and keep it to about 5 minutes each so we don't go too long on this episode. But here are the topics we're going to talk about. I'll just lay them out and then we'll go through them. Topic number one, we're going to talk about Anfernee Simons and Josh Hart. Topic number two, we're going to talk about a couple of the new guys and Keon Johnson and Elijah Hughes. Topic number three, we're going to talk about the New Orleans Pelicans. Topic number four, Blazers draft picks. Five, Damian Lillard's Supermax extension. Number six, does Ant and Dame equal Dame and CJ? And number seven, We're going to talk about Jusuf Nurkić. So let's start number one, Anfernee Simons and Josh Hart. In the past three games, since Nurkić sat down, and let's be honest, the tank began in earnest, the statistical impact for both Anfernee Simons and Josh Hart has declined considerably. If you look at Anfernee Simons' stats in the 23 games between January 3rd and February 16th, that stretch we've talked about a lot on this podcast, he averaged 36 minutes a game. I'm just going to round up or down on these stats. 24 points, 3 rebounds, 6 assists. Shot 46% from the field, 42% from 3, and 85% from the free throw line. The past three games, his minutes are down to 29. Points are down to 17. Rebounds are down to 1.7. Assists are down to 4. And he's shooting 38% from the field, 40% from 3, and 85% from the line. Josh Hart, his first three games with Portland, we knew that he was playing out of his mind.
Mm-hmm.
37 minutes a game, 24 points, 5 boards, 4 assists, 60% from the field, 52% from 3, 77% from the line. But the past three games, minutes down to 27, points down to 11. Rebounds and assists, about 5 and 4, they're about the same. But his field goal percentage is 38% from the field, 0.067 from 3, like 6% from 3. And 73% from the line. So, Orlando, are you worried or not worried about the recent, let's just call it what it is, poor play of Anfernee Simons and Josh Hart?
I'm glad that you started off with an easy one in my eyes. Because I'm not worried at all. No. In fact, I think seeing the way they played when this team was closer to full strength is a better idea of what they're going to be. Now, to your point, Josh Hart did play out of his mind, and we knew it just wasn't sustainable. Wasn't sustainable. It wasn't realistic. So we knew that those numbers were going to come down a little bit, but we got an idea of what his role could potentially be, minus Damian Lillard, obviously. But he's a really good player, and I had some reservations when the deal was made. How is he going to fit in? Is he going to be here long term? What will his role be? And now I'm like, man, if he could be this team's sixth man.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, I think that's wonderful. And then Anfernee Simons. No, dude. No, I mean, the dude is a bucket getter. And in fact, I think that this, you know, slump or bad play that he's experiencing now is going to be great for his development. You know, since they don't practice a whole lot during the season. In a lot of ways, these are practices for the Blazers, especially guys that are going to be here for, you know, the long-term future, the very few of them, I believe, that will be here in a few years. And for Anfernee, to see the defenses that he's facing now, I think it was Mike Richmond that pointed this out and multiple people, but I haven't heard of a box in one since high school. You know, it's been a while since I've truly, you know, I'm joking a little bit, but the fact that, you know, opponents are basically saying, all right, Anfernee is the guy, and we're going to do whatever it takes to make sure that he doesn't get going. I think this is huge for his development, man, and a sample of what it's like to be the guy to get the Dame treatment on a nightly basis. He felt the wrath of that a little bit as teams were blitzing him when, you know, Dame was going back and forth with the abdominal injury. But now that it's him, and he's proven that if he gets going, like, he can win you the game.
Yeah.
Like we saw in those four-game win streaks. I mean, I know Nurk was a huge part of that. But the dude, once he gets going, it just feels like the rim opens up and it's just whatever he throws at it is going through the net. So long story short there, Jared, not worried whatsoever. How about you, man?
I'm going to agree with you on this one. I am not worried. I don't think that whatever happens in these final 23 games since the tank really began, when it comes to the players who are going to be a big part of his team next season, I'm not worried about anything that we see statistically from them. I mean, I want to see what these two do when they are both, like you said, the focus of defensive game plans.
Mm-hmm.
Because right now, I really do think this is the worst roster in the NBA. I think the Blazers right now have two legitimate NBA rotation players playing basketball for them right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, maybe Trendon Watford could qualify. But even then, I mean, I think if the Blazers are good next season,
he's like 14 or 13.
Yeah, he's going to be a really deep rotation player at best. So they have two legitimate NBA rotation players. So, no, I mean, the talent you have around you does matter. And if you're having defenses not have to worry about a single other player on the court other than those two, then it's going to be more difficult for them to get going. And also, because the Blazers are losing by 30 points every night, their minutes are going to be down. They're not going to play that much. They're not playing the fourth quarter. They're getting pulled like halfway through the third quarter. I mean, it's just the
like,
way it's going to be.
Selfishly for Anfernee, me, looking at Anfernee, I'm like, Coach, you're messing with his numbers. We need to crank those suckers up.
That's right. Get him some run out there in the fourth quarter.
Yes.
But no, it's good. I'm not worried about that at all. All right, let's move on to number two, the new guys. So we know Blazers veteran acquisitions at the trade deadline, Hart, who we already talked about, and Justice Winslow, they've been fine about what we expected with both of them. Maybe even a little better than we expected with Winslow. But Portland also acquired a few young players in those trades, and the early results have been underwhelming, I think it's fair to say.
Mm-hmm.
Let's exclude Didi Lozada because he hasn't played and likely will not play this season. But here's a quick look at the stats for Keon Johnson and Elijah Hughes.
Mm-hmm.
Keon Johnson, who came over in the Clippers trade, 3 games he's played with the Blazers right now, 21 minutes per game. He's averaging, we'll just round up, 3 points, 3 rebounds, and an assist. But here's where it gets ugly. He's shooting 14% from the field.
Ouch.
0% from three.
Oh, no.
He's made all his free throws. That's 3 for 21 from the field and 0 of 5 on threes. Elijah Hughes has played 6 games with the Blazers. He came over in the trade that with the Jazz that brought
Ingles.
Ingles here. Yeah, thanks. He's playing 14 minutes a game in 6 games. 3 points, 2 rebounds, less than an assist per game. He's shooting 23% from three, 17% from 23% from the field. I'm sorry, 3%, 17% from three, and I don't think he shot a free throw. 8 for 34 from the field, 4 of 23 from three. So I don't know what we really thought about these two before. I know that I was certainly intrigued and interested by Keon Johnson, but are you worried or not worried about the NBA viability of these two young prospects the Blazers got in trades at the deadline?
This one's a little more interesting. We're going into the weeds here.
Yeah, very much so.
I'm going to keep this tight, but I think this is really depends on what your expectations were of these guys. Like, what did you truly want to see out of a rookie and a second-year player, right? Hughes is...
I mean... With Keon Johnson, I know that his offense is raw, as mm-hmm. we heard, but a total of 3 for 26 from the field and from three, that's pretty rough.
Yeah, yeah. I guess it's time to see what these guys are made of, and so far you don't like what you're seeing.
Yeah.
I guess if I had to choose a side in the game, I'm going to go worried, but... They're so far down on my radar. I guess Keon Johnson was looked at as this, big asset that maybe could be part of a deal in the yeah. future, or maybe you have, a guy that can really step in and play some minutes, as a player that fits positional need defensively. From that side, you don't like what you see so far. So I'm optimistic that these guys can get it going, but right now I'm going to say I would be worried if you were banking on one or two of these dudes working out for you and maybe creating some buzz or interest, where other teams see him and you're like, oh,
right.
This is a guy that we could use. Maybe we can include him in a package deal. How about you?
Yeah, I think that's why I'd be a little bit worried by, and I mean, it's such a small sample size, but Keon Johnson was looked at as, in that trade with the Clippers, who a lot of people are very critical of, he was the value add in that trade.
Mm-hmm.
He was the first round pick equivalent because he was the 21st pick in the draft last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's hard to imagine other teams seeing him unless a team that was in the top 10 or like valued him or projected him as like a top 10 talent before the draft last season still believes in him. It's hard for me to believe that based on one, what he showed in Los Angeles before he came to Portland this season as a rookie, and then what he's shown so far with the Blazers, that other teams are going to look at him and be like, yeah, I'd like that guy to be put into this deal to kind of sweeten the pot when the Blazers are trying to make trades this summer. So I think that when I was looking at him as the equivalent of a first-round pick in that trade based on that, then, yeah, I'm a little bit worried because you definitely see the athleticism with him. I think that you do see the defensive potential, but, man, the offense is rough. As far as Elijah Hughes, I kind of do feel like he was kind of just, you know, a former second-round pick that was thrown into the trade. I didn't have any kind of high expectations for him, so I'm not really worried about that. But, yeah, what I've seen from Keon Johnson, I would like to see him. He's young. I get it, but just a little bit more to his game than what he's shown so far. Number three, let's talk about the New Orleans Pelicans.
This one should be fun.
This one's more interesting.
I'm curious to hear your thoughts on this one.
So, you know, I mean, we are very interested. The Blazers are very interested in what the Pelicans do the rest of the season. Just to recap, the first-round pick that Portland got in the CJ McCollum trade only conveys to the Blazers if the Pelicans miss the playoffs. Play-in doesn't matter. If they make the play-in and miss the playoffs, that does not matter. And their draft pick then falls between number 5 and number 14, because if it's in the top 4, it goes to the Pelicans. So if the draft pick doesn't convey this season, then it's a 2025 first-round pick from the Bucks. And that's not the same value, because the Bucks do look like they're going to be good for a while. So here's where the Pelicans currently stand. Since the All-Star break, they have won 3 in a row, beating the Suns, Lakers, and Kings. In those 3 games, they are a plus 73. And right now in 10th place, a game ahead of the Blazers, 2 ahead of the Spurs, just a game and a half behind the Lakers now for 9th. I think 8th and 7 is out of reach. They're 6 games behind the Clippers and 7.5 behind the T-Wolves. So are you worried, Orlando, or not worried about the Pelicans pick not conveying to the Blazers this season?
Dude, they could catch the Lakers.
Yes. Yes.
And the further they move up, and the CJ has played pretty well. He's shot pretty well. Him and Ingram together, that's fun. What's the status on Zion?
There is no status that anyone knows.
Yeah.
I don't expect him to be back this season.
This is a good one, because, yeah, I was thinking about this as I root for them to lose, you know?
Yeah. You have to root for them to lose.
But not lose.
But not lose too much.
Right. We don't need those odds to increase the way we want the Blazers' odds to increase for those top 4 picks.
Exactly.
I love explaining this. Like, I'm basically doing a sports cast like every night where I drop this in somehow.
Right.
It's like, let's take a look at the Pelicans. Or, all right, here's why we want the Blazers to lose tonight.
Right,
you know,
exactly.
But I think that if I'm taking a side, I'm a little worried. Mm. I'm a little worried that the Pelicans are going to mess around and end up in the playoffs.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a tough one, because before the break, they were 1-4 mm-hmm. or something like that, you know, since the CJ trade. It didn't seem like CJ and Brandon Ingram were really meshing,
mm-hmm.
but now they are.
Yep.
Now they're both playing great alongside each other. And, you know, I mean, the Lakers and the Kings, neither of those are very impressive wins in my mind, because both of those teams are playing so poorly right now. But still, to be a plus 73, I mean, that
you're cooking.
You can't fake that. I mean, the thing that you got to think about is, for the Pelicans to make the playoffs, you don't want them to just lose a bunch of games and get one of those top 4 picks.
Mm-hmm.
But for them to make the playoffs, whether they're 10 or 9, whether they catch the Lakers or not, they have to beat the Lakers or whoever else is in, you know, that 9-10 spot. And then they have to go after that, and they have to beat the loser of the 7-8 game.
Mm-hmm. So right now, 7 would be Minnesota, 8 Clippers, 9 right. Lakers, 10.
So, yeah. So, like, if it happened right now, they'd have to beat the Lakers, which I could see them doing.
Mm-hmm.
But then they have to go and beat either the Timberwolves or the Clippers.
Mm-hmm.
That's still a tough road, but I think it's a road that, like, you know how CJ can get in the playoffs mm-hmm. if he gets hot. I mean, they're a good team. They're an interesting team. So, yeah, I'm worried.
Yeah, it's no longer
I'm worried
like,
about it.
Yeah.
I wasn't so worried about it before because they were losing. But now that they're playing like this, I could see them reeling off a couple wins against the Lakers and, like, the T-Wolves or the Clippers or something.
Yeah, because more likely than not, they're going to be in the play-in.
Yeah, and I think so. The only thing I could see is I think the Spurs could possibly – I mean, It would take the Pelicans like slowing down a little bit. Mm-hmm. But I think the Spurs could possibly catch them because I think the Spurs are going to be good down the stretch. But I don't know. We'll see.
And the Pelicans, the Pelicans' last three games are against the Blazers, Grizzlies, and Warriors.
Yeah.
For what that's worth.
Blazers, Grizzlies, Warriors.
Yeah. Okay. Like there's some wins in here, but like their schedule's decent.
I'm gonna look
The rest of the way.
Tankathon also does remaining strength of schedule.
Uh huh.
I'm gonna look and see. I know before they had like one of the hardest remaining schedules. So
yeah, their next three is Utah, Denver, Memphis. So I mean, that's a tough three game stretch.
So right now, their remaining schedule is okay. So it's gone down a little bit. It's like right in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
16th hardest remaining schedule. The Blazers, of course, have the easiest remaining schedule in the NBA. Thank goodness they're as bad as they are.
Right. Or else Anthony's going to be on that list somehow, some way.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll get some more
I think
Keon Johnson and Hughes playing time, man.
Yeah, so that's going to happen regardless. I think that still the most realistic scenario is that they make the play-in and don't get to the playoffs. Mm-hmm. But with the way they're playing right now, I'm definitely a lot more worried than I used to be.
Playoff CJ, you need to chill, man.
Yeah, chill.
Denver Nuggets a few years ago, you need to chill. That's not what Portland wants to see right now.
All right, so we're both worried about the Pels.
Yep.
All right, let's move on to a related topic, number four here, Blazers draft picks. Every Blazers fan in the world is holding out hope that everything falls Portland's way between now and the draft. We want them to keep losing games. We want them to end up with one of the five or six worst records like we talked about and then get a little bit of lottery luck to get a top three pick. We want the Pelicans to miss the playoffs but not be bad enough or lucky enough to get a top four pick. But things could also go sideways. I don't think we talk about this or think about it as much as we should. The Pelicans could make the playoffs. Or they just miss out and the pick is just 10th or 11th. The Blazers could get bad luck in the lottery and fall back just like we did. We just ran the lottery simulator and the Blazers ended up with 10 and 11 in the in the picks. That could happen. What if the Blazers don't have good luck? What if they end up with a 10th pick and no pick from the Pelicans or something like picks 9 and 11? If the Blazers don't get lucky with these two potential lottery picks, are you worried or not worried that the Blazers then won't have the assets to make moves to build a solid winning roster around Dame?
Dude, I was thinking about, you know, life philosophies and, you know, how so many players, you know, will mention, well, I'm not going to stress about the things I can't control. And in a lot of ways, I try and live my life under those circumstances, man. And like there are so many
scenarios,
variables and scenarios here that you're just hoping. And with that being said, as somebody who has hit the simulate button multiple times and it has not worked out for the Blazers so far in my world, I am worried because there are just so many things that could happen here. You're hoping the stars align and that you end up with a top four and the Pelicans fall to you at number five.
Right.
Like that's like the ultimate, right?
Yep.
But there are so many more scenarios that are opposite of that. And, you know, there's an entire disaster that could happen if the Pelicans make the playoffs somehow, you know? So, yeah, right now I'm worried about it. And I was even really hyping this up within our newsroom and our anchors that I was like, man, the lottery is going to be one of the biggest days in Portland in quite some time for basketball. Because so much of the future is tied up in ping pong balls.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm worried.
Especially if the Pels make the playoffs.
Dude.
We already both said we're worried about.
Totally.
Yeah, of course I'm worried. And I think with this, I mean, what this comes down to is if they end up with just one pick their own and it's, you know, 9 or 10 and they don't get the Pels pick,
mm-hmm.
or if they end up with, like, say, 10 and 11, mm-hmm. that severely limits what they can do in the off season.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're not getting one of those. Maybe you luck out and make a good pick in the draft, but you don't have access to those top flight talents. Like the top of this draft is good. Like, if they were to get Chet Holmgren or Jabari Smith or Paolo Banchero, like, those are really good players that you could build around. They're the kind of young players that, like, you could put next to Dame. And as Dame gets older and in the twilight of his career, and those guys get better and better, that could, you could build, like, a really good team around that, along with Ant and the other pieces that they have. But then if you end up with just one lottery pick or a couple late lottery picks, I mean, look at what the, maybe compare it to like what the Warriors had last season.
Mm-hmm.
They had the 7th pick and they had the 14th pick. The 14th pick they drafted, I mean, they shopped those two picks and found nothing of interest. And then they drafted Moses Moody with the 14th pick, who has done really nothing this season. And then they got Kuminga with the 7th pick, and he looks good. He looks promising. He looks interesting, but he's also still just a reserve, mm-hmm. who's not really impacting them very much at all on the court. So that's what, if that's the way it ends up, then that's kind of what you're looking at. And maybe you could turn around and trade, like if you had 9 and 10 or 10 and 11, maybe you could take those two picks and trade them for Jeremy Grant. But then that's it. That's
right.
Pretty much your off season. And how much better does that really make the Blazers? Then they're kind of probably just about where they were before they made all these moves. So much depends on luck for mm-hmm. this team right now. They put themselves in a position where they do have a chance at luck, you know, favoring them. But everything depends on those lottery balls. Everything depends on, you know, how it works with the Pelicans going forward. So, yeah, I'm worried about that for sure.
Man, that's going to be a really fun one. And for the listeners out there, feel free to tweet at us with some of these, because I'd be curious. Maybe we can tweet out something later and maybe take a couple of these key ones and say, worried or not worried, what do you think?
Yeah.
And if you want, you know, give us your opinion as well, because I think that the Blazers draft pick and the Pelicans specifically becomes way more pressing as we, you know, chip off games down the stretch.
Yeah.
That's going to be a lot of fun, and I'm sure we're going to have more discussions on that. So I won't take up too much more time on that, because I'm sure we'll probably end up having a deep dive podcast on that, because that's really the main event.
Yeah, we're going to bring that up many more times between now and the draft lottery. Okay, let's move on. Number 5, Damian Lillard's extension. We talked about this a little bit on a previous podcast, but we're going to circle back to it. And I'm sure it's going to come up again many times between now and this summer. We know that Damian Lillard is eligible to sign a 2-year Supermax extension this summer, which would tack on an additional $107 million under the end of Dame's current deal. Dame would then be making $50 million plus in both the 2025-26 season when he's 35 years old and the 2026-27 season when he's 36. We know from reporting that Lillard wants that extension. So, Orlando, are you worried or not worried about the Blazers granting Lillard that extension this offseason?
For me, no.
Not at all?
Mm-mm.
No worry at all?
No. I understand there's so much in limbo, right? Like, if this year, if the offseason turns out to be a disaster, Dame's probably gone anyway. So, you're probably having this discussion with him. I just, at this point, right now, I'm not worried about it. If you believe in Dame, if the goal is to build around him, this is part of the process in building around Damian Lillard. If you love Damian Lillard as a Portland Trailblazer, if you want to see him retire here, this is part of the deal. I understand the concern of an aging player, right? But I think someone like Dame and his game translates well for years. I don't think there's going to be, unless this turns out to be an injury that he just can't get over, which I doubt. I don't think this is what takes him down. I think you're dealing with an all-NBA player for multiple years. And what gives me hope is seeing what the Phoenix Suns have done. I think that's been kind of a blueprint.
Yeah.
Even in terms of what they did in the draft with Ayton, you know, obviously it takes a lot of luck, as we've mentioned earlier, and the stars have to align. But you have your superstar experienced veteran high IQ player that gets it done in Chris Paul, Damian Lillard. Then you have a Devin Booker. Oh, wait, you've got an Anthony Simons who's 22 years old with a ceiling that is Damian-esque.
Yeah.
And then you pair that with whoever your draft pick is or whatever you get in return to those draft picks. Like, there's a lot of promise in that, and I think that Damian Lillard can still be the centerpiece of that, and you've got to be able to prove that you can bring in power forward and all of the needs that they haven't been able to address in the past 7-8 years. But at this point, in signing Damian Lillard, if that is your plan, if that is what you believe in, go for it. Get it done. Now, if Dame has, if there's doubts, then of course you're not doing it, you know. But for me, right now at this point, in March of 2022, no worry. Not worried about that. How about you?
I'm a little worried about it. And I hear everything you're saying. And I think Dame comes back and is a, you know, a top 10 level player again next season. I think he comes back really strong from this injury. I think that it's interesting that he's played with this for 4 years, and you've heard him say multiple times that he had no idea how injured he actually was until he got the surgery.
Yeah, when your doctor is telling you how are you doing this?
Right. So I expect him to come back as good or better than he was before the surgery. I think where my concern lies and why I'm worried is that I don't know if this is going to work out.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to build a championship roster around Dame. I still believe that that's what Dame wants. I don't know if he is transitioned from what he was last summer, where he was saying, we need to have a championship roster,
mm-hmm.
to now where he's just like, yeah, I'll stay in Portland even if we're not, you know, a championship contender. I still think that he wants a championship.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I'm not thoroughly convinced, as much as I like all the moves that Joe Cronin has made and the flexibility that he's created and the opportunities he's given this team to build around Dame, I still don't know if it's going to work out, if they're going to be able to build a roster that's that much better than what they were.
Mm-hmm. That's
which
fair.
Is a first round team, maybe a second round team. And so if that happens and Dame then decides in a year or two that, like, I've done everything I can, I'm ready to move on. If you then tack on that extra $107 million for age 35 and age 36 season, how does that impact his trade value if he does ask out? And that's what concerns me, because I really think it's important that, one, they're positioning themselves to do everything they can to try and build a championship roster around Dame, but that if that doesn't work out and Dame asks out, that you're able to then maximize the rebuild that you're immediately going into. And the way to maximize that is to get as much as you can in a trade for Dame if it comes to that. And I don't know if that Supermax extension is going to make that harder for the Blazers to do if it comes to that. So I keep thinking about that. I keep going back to it. And I understand. I think they have to give him that Supermax extension if that's what he wants.
Mm-hmm.
But it does concern me about what that could mean for the team going forward. And I think that I am definitely looking ahead a year or two, or, but it is, you have to look ahead that far.
Sure.
Because he's coming to the last few years of his career, I think.
Yeah. And, you know, naturally, if you're looking at this on a piece of paper, you know that you hit your early 30s and the decline begins.
Like Chris Paul is the exception.
Right.
Not like every, like, superstar point guard continues to play at an all-star level into age 35, age 36, like Paul is.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
Most of them don't.
Yeah. I mean, Paul's 36, man.
Yep.
So, yeah, I'm very interested to see how you'll feel after we get through the summer.
Yeah.
You know, like, what does this team look like?
And how I'll feel when I see Dame back on the court next season.
Right. Because he could end up being another one of those exceptions, which I kind of think he is.
He could be, yeah. Because so much about his game is the kind of thing that usually does age well.
But I know you're not alone. I think there's a ton of Blazers fans that are worried about this topic, looking ahead at the future and thinking, well, what is the max we could get? And what is the most valuable piece that we have here that could set us up for the future?
Right.
So I understand that. And if that ends up being the plan when they get to this fork in the road and Cronin has to make a decision, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that it once was just a couple of years ago, where that would have been like super laughable.
Yeah.
And now it's a legitimate discussion that is taking place within Blazers fans. So yeah, let's circle back on that one.
Yeah, we will.
I'm going to love that.
We will. Number six, do Ant and Dame equal Ant and Dame equal Dame and CJ? We talked about this one on a recent podcast too, but I do want to bring it up again, and I think we'll probably talk about it again a lot between now and next season, because Anthony Simons is 6'3". CJ McCollum is 6'3". Are you worried or not worried, Orlando, about the Blazers committing to yet another 6'3" backcourt?
It's the definition of insanity, right? Doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. And man, I told you, man, they're gonna let me have it, you know, for the receipts will be there, but I'm not worried. For me, my argument will be it's who you surround them with. Yeah. If those are your two best players, if those are your buckets, surround them with guys that complement them. Don't bring in another 6'3" guy to complement them.
Please no.
You know, so that's where I stand on this, and that's a hill that I'll probably die on with the Trailblazers, because to a fault, I felt the same way about Dame and CJ. And if Anthony's ceiling is higher than CJ's, and you know, they have the potential to be one of the best backcourts in the NBA. So yeah, I'm gonna roll with not worried. What says you?
I think I'm more in the not worried camp than the worried camp, but I'm certainly not like all the way there, because there is no denying that Dame is 6'3" and a terrible defensive player, and as of right now, Ant is also 6'3" and also a terrible defensive player.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw this for 8 years, mm-hmm, with Dame and CJ, and as many great moments as there were with those two, and as much as we love them, like, we know what the ceiling was because of their defensive limitations. And you're right, it is about the players they put around them. But I think the reason I'm going to choose to put myself in the not worried camp is because I'm not going to consider the alternative, which is you don't bring back Anthony Simons, mm-hmm, and make him the future of this franchise. I would be much more worried about that, mm, than about moving forward with Dame and Ant as your starting backcourt. And Nas, Nasir Little already has shown himself to be an improving defensive player who has the potential to be a very good defensive wing, you know, who can start at the three or play a lot of minutes, you know, off the bench as a forward. Josh Hart is a very good defensive player. If you're playing him all of his minutes at the one and the two, that helps you, you know, when Dame or Ant is on the bench, then you have a stalwart defensive player next to them. If you can bring in, I know not everybody is super high on Jeremy Grant, mm-hmm, but I think that he's exactly the kind of player you need to put next to a backcourt like Dame and Ant because of his defensive versatility. He is such a good defensive four who can, you know, switch between both forward positions and probably even, you know, shift over to center sometimes. So yeah, I think I'm going to go not worried, but
I see you, man. I see you struggling with it.
It keeps popping up into my brain. It's like that Spider-Man movie.
You trying to push your inner Nate out right now?
Yeah, that's what it is. It's like all these texts that Nate keeps sending me. Just mocking me relentlessly for my Blazers optimism.
Like you said, man, it's all expectation.
Yep.
If you ride the wave right now, man. Right.
And again, I'm not going to consider the alternative. They need to bring back Ant, and they need to build around him as they continue to build around Dame. All right, Yusuf Nurkic is number 7 in our final topic. Yusuf Nurkic is out for likely the rest of the season because of plantar fasciitis. We all agree this injury is more about the Blazers' tank, mm-hmm, than it is actually about Nurkic's heel, but it does bring up Nurkic's injury history. In 8 NBA seasons, I crunched the numbers. Nurkic has played 411 games out of 637 possible games, which means he has missed, over the course of his career, 35% of his team's games because of injury. There's probably a few games thrown in here and there that weren't because of injury, but most of them are for injury. It seems clear now that the Blazers are going to re-sign Nurkic this summer, I believe. So, are you worried or not worried about the Blazers committing more years to Nurkic as their starting center when he has a history over 8 seasons of being available for only about 65% of his team's games?
That's fair to be concerned, man. we've discussed that topic with Nurkic at nausea.
Yeah.
Like for the past few years, that, you know, his availability is so key to the success of this team because he covers up a lot of their defensive woes. He is such an important part of this team. I don't question what he is when he's on the court, generally speaking.
Yeah.
You know, like he has his moments where he makes mistakes, foul trouble, etc. Get all that. But generally, when he's out there, you got yourself like a top 10 center.
I think so, yeah.
Maybe even better.
Yeah.
And so I think that the front office is banking on that a little bit with this. And, you know, we kind of joke about it, and we don't know. This isn't like us reporting, but I'm sure there is some understanding with this plantar fasciitis that, all right, Nurk, we're going to shut it down, but here's what we're going to work out. We've got an idea for you. And clearly Nurk is on board with whatever this is, or you would think so. So I don't know if you're going to be able to bring in somebody better. And if you can work out a deal that makes Nurk happy, but is also beneficial for this team, and that salary cap and, you know, trying to build other pieces around, if you can get Nurk at a deal that works for everyone, I think this is a not worry situation. But the injury / availability is always going to be there. That is what you sign up for with Nurkic. But man, when he's out there, he's good. For the sake of picking a side, like we've had to do in some of these, which are tough, Jared, I'm going to say not worried because I know what I'm getting. I know what I'm signing up for. Whether I like it or not, this is who you're rolling with. And for that, my final answer, not worried. But check back with me, you know, next season when we're frustrated about something.
That's where I stand, is check back with me a little bit later. Because
right,
it's really hard for me to decide how worried I am. A little bit worried about this.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard to decide how worried I am until I know what the contract looks like,
mm-hmm,
and what the Blazers do to put a backup center.
Yeah.
Because if they give him 4 years, $80 million, I'm worried. If they give him like 2 years, 32, mm-hmm, you know, 3 years and 48, I'm not as worried. Because
mm-hmm,
that's a reasonable contract. And if they sign a legitimate backup center who can swing between, you know, playing those backup minutes and filling in and, you know, not allowing the Blazers to fall apart when Nurkic is hurt, then I'll feel better about it. But those are two big ifs. I don't know what that contract's going to look like this offseason. I think he's going to get it. I think he's going to be back with the Blazers, but I don't know what the contract's going to look like, and I don't know who they're going to have backing him up.
Right.
You know, for everything that has happened and since he left Portland, when they had Enes Kanter, mm-hmm, as the backup center who could play those backup minutes and be happy with that, but then fill in admirably when Nurkic was hurt, it worked. It was fine. It was okay. They got to the Western Conference Finals with Kanter as their starting center. But I just don't know what that's going to look like. So I'm worried. I'm not going to decide how worried I am until I know what it looks like this after this offseason.
Yeah, I think so much of this is incomplete, dude.
Yeah.
Because of that. Again, what makes this offseason so intriguing,
yeah,
is there are so many moving pieces, and you know they're not done yet.
Yep.
So this is, we're going to look back and laugh at some of these, I think.
As we always do.
Yeah, as things develop and unfold over the season. But, dude, I really like the premise of this segment. I think it's a lot of fun, and I do think that people will have opinions on these topics, man.
Cool. Let's finish with a listener question.
Let's do it.
So our good friend Mike in Japan.
What up, Mike? What up?
Who loves to reach out to us and talk to us about the Blazers and ask our questions. He said, I would be interested to hear what you think of Ben McLemore. He has been great for us this year, hasn't he? Is his strong performance this year going to earn him a big contract next year? Would the Blazers want to re-sign him?
I want to hear what you have to say about this, Jared, because I'm sure You've done a deep dive into Ben McLemore.
Mike, man, I love you, but no, I don't see any of this. And listen, McLemore's averaging 9 points in about 19 minutes per game off the bench. He is a good three-point shooter for sure.
He has had some nice moments in this season, right?
Nice moments. I mean, he's shooting 36% from three. He takes six a game. About 80% of his shot attempts are threes. I mean, that's what he does. But basically, three-point shooting is all he does well. I think he's a solid vet. He doesn't make a lot of mistakes, but he's not a good rebounder. He's not a good playmaker. He's not a good defender. His defensive Raptor rating is third worst on the team among players who played at least 200 minutes this season. Only Cody Zeller, who, you know, is no longer with the team, and Trenton Watford have been worse. And so I do like McLemore as an outside shooter off the bench. When he gets hot, he can really help the team. On those nights when he hits, you know, 4 three-pointers or more off the bench, and he's had 11 games like that this season, he can really help the team in those games. But he's an otherwise flawed player with one great skill, and that skill is going to keep him in the league. But I don't think he's getting a big contract this summer. I mean, I honestly, he's probably going to sign for the veterans minimum again. I could see the Blazers bringing him back at that price next season as an outside shooter off the bench. But I think if Portland wants to be a good team next season, I don't think McLemore, if he does come back to Portland, gets a lot of playing time or will be much more than like a deep rotation player at best. So I like McLemore. I think he's been a good pickup. They've needed those minutes this season, especially. But no, I don't think he's getting a big contract. And I think if the Blazers do bring him back, it's, you know, on a minimum deal as an end of the bench player.
Sorry, Mike. Jared kind of warned you with this one. But yeah, man, I do agree with you. And I understand the love for him because he has been fun. And there have been games this season where he's given the Blazers a lift. And you're like, oh, man, he's hit some, you know, some timely shots and stuff like that. So I get it. And I can understand where his question was going. But I totally agree with you, Jared, that he's not exactly what the Blazers are looking for in a team that's hoping to make a run next season in the playoffs.
The other thing is he's another 6'3 guard. So
yeah.
I don't know if we really need more of those.
So. Yeah.
I like him. He's a solid vet. He's fine. Mm-hmm. You know? He's fine. So
dude, it was good.
Thank you for the question.
It was good. Yes. Keep him coming, my man. Thanks for reaching out, Mike in Japan on Twitter. And that goes for any of our listeners who want to get involved in the conversation. Hit us up. I'm at Orlando KGW. Where can they find you, Jared?
At Jared Cowley on Twitter.
Yeah, man. So let's do it. 20 games left in the regular season. Let's keep the tank going. Let's see what happens because it's super. I find myself interested in it. I'm not watching Blazers games the way I was before.
Yeah.
But there still is a lot of intrigue around it.
I'm certainly scoreboard watching.
Totally.
Every night.
Totally. It has more of a fantasy football vibe.
Yeah.
You know, tank zone instead of red zone or something like that. We'll have to work out the branding on it. But, you know, we'll keep hitting the tankathon and see where the Blazers land next. So, Jared, it's been real, man. Another great podcast in the books. Let's run it back better than ever. Thank you to everyone for listening and supporting the podcast. We'll catch you on the next one. Take care, everyone.